friends. My topic is how to encourage young members and retain them for the future. Of course, this was given to me. I don't know if Andy or Mike who came up with this, but it's a very good topic, I think. When I saw it, I thought, well, I'd like to hear a lesson on that myself. I think it's something that's very needed because the young people are the future of the church. So certainly we need to encourage them every way we can. We need to help them, encourage them, study with them, whatever we can do to. We need to encourage all, I guess, but especially the young members because, like I say, they're going to take over. We won't be around always. And we got some bright young minds, and they need to be encouraged in the right way to serve God. I think one of the best ways to learn to encourage is by the example of Paul. You know, Paul was all about encouraging, exhorting, and seeing after the different churches that he helped start. He was forever doing that, and he was doing whatever he could to educate the members. That's very important, too. So a lot of things Paul did, I think if we look at what he did and try to follow him, he made it his business for them to know that he was there for them. He wanted them to know that, and I think pretty well they must have. If you read those letters that he wrote, they couldn't have missed the point that Paul was there. He was their friend. He was ready to help them any way he could. He was always praying for their well-being. He would say that in some of those epistles. He said, "You're always in my prayers." He was very much concerned about all of them that were there. So he would pray. He would continue to check on them. And if he couldn't be in their presence, like I said, he would pray for them. And he would send letters out to them. He'd send letters to individuals and letters to the churches. Church as a whole, you know, the church was young at that time too. So had a lot of young members there that he was encouraging. You could say that he was a leader in the encouraging department for sure. He kind of paved the way for all of us, if you look at it. I'm used to a podium where I can just see it and not have to wave around. I wiggle around too much already as it is. So, I think one of the reasons that Paul was able to accomplish all that he did was because he had such a love for God and a love for his fellow man. And that showed all that he did. And that's certainly a quality that we need. You know, Jesus tells us in Matthew 22:38-39, the greatest commandment, he says, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. That's a short little sentence, but that's a huge thing to do. So love is foundational. He says the second one is likened to it, and you should love your neighbor as yourself. So love is a big part of it. If you want to start doing anything, if we hope to encourage anybody, be it young members or whoever, then it can only be done out of genuine love. That's where we start. Paul wrote 13 epistles. 14 if you count Hebrews. Of course, I do count it. I'm pretty sure that he wrote that. It's neither here nor there, but we can very well choose any number of his writings and we can still be edified from what he has to say. But I would like to look at Titus chapter 2, if you will look along there with me. Because in this chapter, Paul is giving advice to the young sister and the young brothers, which are the young members there, as well as all members. There's some things in there for us as well as the younger ones. So let's see what Paul has to say to the young man as he encourages him and advises him in his teaching. Titus chapter 2. He begins there in verse 1. He says, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine." First and foremost, Paul didn't want the guy standing up there speculating, sort of like I'm doing right now. He didn't want him just giving his opinion and rambling on and on about this and that and so on and so forth. He said, "Teach them sound doctrine." That's what they needed. They needed to know that church was young. They needed to know exactly what was the truth and not what he thought might be the truth and speculating and so forth. He said, "Teach them sound doctrine." You know, I looked at that and I thought that I wonder if maybe I don't fail at that sometimes. I think sometimes we don't teach sound doctrine enough. When you look at some of the young ones in the church, I've seen children grow up in church every Sunday, and then they get up back grown and get married, and they really don't have a good understanding about the Bible. They don't understand doctrine completely as they should. And I think sometimes I myself am failing, so maybe some of us, we don't do that as often as we should. Paul begins verse 2 by telling Titus what the duties are of different ones in the church. He points out different ones. so that he may communicate these qualifications to the members there, what they should do, what's expected of them. Titus had a huge job here. He was overseeing the flock, and he was young himself, so that's the reason Paul was writing to him. Verse 2, he says, "Let the aged men be sober," controlled, in other words, "grave, serious, temperate, exhibiting self-control." He said aged men because some of these things you don't see that in somebody 16 years old. It's rare, I would say. You have to sort of grow into these things if you're going to be all these things. Sound in faith. In other words, strong in the Christian faith. Not wavering any. Sound in charity, of course. Charity is talking about the labor of love. There's that love again that we should have. Then patience, he says. Steadfastly persevering. Sometimes as we get older, we think, well, I've done a lot. You know, I can kind of slack up a little bit. No, we cannot. Doesn't matter how old we get. No matter how long we've been in the church, we cannot. We've got to patiently, steadfastly persevere. That's what he was saying. He said, tell the aged men, this is what they must do. So there's no time for any of us to take a vacation or slack up. Verse 3, he said, the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness. That's reverent, devout. They're all about behavior, in purity, in the behavior, and in thought. So there's tall order for the women there. That's what he's saying to the aged women, not false accusers. They're not slanderers. They're not busybodies. They're not gossiping. They're minding their own business. If they say anything about anybody, it's something good. He says, not given to much wine. I won't come in too much on that, but evidently wine was commonplace back in those days because it's mentioned several places in the Bible. You know, talking about the qualifications of an elder, they're not supposed to have too much wine, you know, and Jesus turned the water into wine over at the wedding. So wine is mentioned. I think you can't ignore it. It was so prevalent, maybe that's why Paul said this. He said, not given too much wine. He said, even though it's there and commonplace and everybody else is doing it, maybe that was his thoughts, my thought. He's saying, don't overindulge in that. Teachers of good things, that's both by example and precept. Teach good things, that's what they're to do. They're to be teachers, is what he's saying. Then he tells them one of the reasons why the aged women should possess these qualities. One reason, of course, they're trying to get to heaven. They're doing all they can to serve God. But another reason is, verse 4 and 5 says, that they may teach young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste. We know what all those things are, I think. Keepers at home. You know, ideally, if all the women could be home, if the man could make the living and all the women could stay home, it would be, I think the country would be stronger. But you know, when a woman went out in the workplace and it kind of fell away, the home kind of suffered because of that. And I'm as guilty as anybody. Julie works harder than I do, so I can't say that I do this, you should do this. I'm just saying all of us together, it kind of slipped out of our fingers. The women went to the workplace and the home suffered and the church suffered as a result. The kids are not trained as much as they should. They carted off to babysitters and whatnot. Because poor people, you have to work, so you give that. But that's what he's saying. He said, ideally, let the woman be in the home place, keep the home. She should be good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. In verse 6, he says, young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded. That's all he says about the young men. He had a whole lot to say about the young women there that the aged women were to teach. But he didn't really elaborate too much on this. I guess it's just a given that he's supposed to aspire to be as an aged man, whatever qualification the aged man is supposed to have, then the young man is supposed to aspire to be there, to grow into that. So, but anyway, that's all we have on the young man. Then verse 7, he's talking to Titus. He says, in all things, showing thyself a pattern of good works. He said, everything you do, he said, you're an example. You're leading the flock here. Everything you do, you're the pattern. Everybody else is patterning after you. Showing incorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he is of the contrary part, may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. He said, live in such a way, speak in such a way, do everything you do in such a way that even your enemy, when he's trying to look at you and criticize you, cannot find anything wrong. He's trying to say, be like Jesus was. They couldn't find anything wrong with him. They tried. Lawyers tried. They looked for loopholes, tried everything they could do, and they could find no fault in Jesus. So I think he's saying, in effect, you need to pattern after him. Of course, we all should. But that's the order he gave him. He said, you're the example. Certainly, it would be good for all Christians to do what you can to encourage one another. We're here today. We're encouraging one another being here today ourselves. We go about doing that all the time. We should very well. Notice Hebrews 3 and 13. It says, but exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sins. Exhort one another daily. So that's one another. He's talking about all of us, every one of us. You know, Jesus died for the church. We know that. A lot of emphasis is placed on the church. When you think about that, God wants us to stand together. That's the reason for the church. He could have done it any way he wanted to. He wants us to worship together, lean on each other, be there for each other. That's what he wants from us. You can't worship by yourself. If I'm at home by myself, I cannot worship by myself. That's not the plan. That's not what God wanted. It's what Jesus didn't die for. Confess your faults one to another. That helps you to get it off your chest to a good brother that loves you. You can bounce it off him. This is what I've done. He said, well, I'll pray for you. You'll be good. You know, you'll be strong. I'll help you through this. Pray for one another. That's what it's all about. So what I'm saying is, we need to encourage one another. We're brothers and sisters in Christ. We're children of God. You think about that. It's a tall order. We're children of God. We're one big family. That's how it is. We're one. So, but according to Paul here, what he's saying there, when dealing with fragile young members, he said you need to be careful with them. He recommends that they're encouraged more by the aged men or the aged women, somebody that's sound in faith. Because, you know, if I just started in the church last week and had a new member come in, I wouldn't know a whole lot to tell him. So, like I said, it's good for us all to encourage one another as best we can. But the ones more qualified are the aged ones. Great encouragement can come from true, dedicated, experienced Christians. Of course, that's the very best scenario. But again, I say we can all do what we can. That's why the older women are to be given responsibility to teach the young women, in particular in the areas mentioned there in verses 5 and 6. They're qualified to do this, aren't they? They are. They're qualified. They've lived this long life. They've raised a family. They've been married more than they were single. They've been through this. They have experienced it firsthand. So in teaching the young women to love their husbands, love their children, this special advice is well received from a sweet Christian mother. Makes a difference. You think about that. No one else can fill that bill as well as she can. Anybody can give you advice, but she's been there and she knows what she's talking about. That's why Paul said the aged women should teach the younger women. So what we learned here, really, if you look at what he says so far, what he told Titus, we're all members, we're meeting these qualifications, supposedly, that he lays out for them there. We're all supposed to be doing this. Look at verses 12, 13, and 14. Talks more directly to us. Teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. So when he's saying all that, the whole chapter, if you look at all of it, I skipped three verses there. It's talking about slaves. We don't have slaves, but the rest of it's talking to all of us. This is our duty to do these things. He said it's a tall order when you look at it. You've got to be very serious-minded about this. It's not half-heartedly. We just go to church sometimes, go through the motions. Let's hurry up and go eat lunch, and we'll go do this and whatever. we've done this for years, and this is mundane, on and on and on, go through the motions, but it's very, very serious. Might be the last service we come to. We need to look at it, strive to do our best, and try to be encouraging to others, to our young members. You know, when they start to think, you know, when you're a new member, a young member coming into the church, maybe they've never been to church before in their life. It doesn't say here, it just says young members. They don't know anything about church. It's a whole new lifestyle for them. Maybe they look at this and they say, well, it's overwhelming. When you read verses 12, 13, and 14, it's almost overwhelming for us, and we've been in church for a while. So for a young member to see this, he might think, I can't do this. I can't do this. He might very well say that. He might start to think it's impossible. But if he looks at an entire congregation and he sees all these people, and he sees somebody like me, and he thinks, well, if he can muddle through this, I know I can. So that's encouraging to him. Do you see what I'm saying? We are an encouragement in that way. Any teaching on our part must be demonstrated by the lives that we live. Must be. Absolutely. Has to be. If you're going to teach, you teach by what you do more so than what you say. I'm not telling you anything new. I'm just having to point it out. This is my lesson. You can probably all tell me better than what I'm saying to you this morning. You understand this. It will fail miserably if we try to talk to some young member and we're not living it ourselves. They can see right through that. Little babies can see through us pretty much. Baby knows if he's loved or not loved. A young member knows if he's loved or not loved. Something there. We can't fool anybody with that. It's just common sense. You know, it's like trying to raise a child at home. If a parent is trying to raise a child, trying to teach him to be honest, hardworking, and responsible, all these good qualities, and the parent doesn't have any of these qualities himself, he's none of these things, but he's trying to teach it to the child, he's going to fail miserably. It's not going to happen. That's not to say that the child won't grow up to have these qualities. He can rise above his circumstance and very well have these qualities in spite of his parents and not because of them. Because he can see that this wasn't happening with his parents, and so he has no respect for them and most times doesn't listen. So, verse 15, let's get back to that, ending the chapter here. These things speak and exhort and rebuke with all authority. That's what Paul says in the final verse. Speak and exhort and rebuke with all authority. These things, all these things. He says, this, you got to do this. So after he gave all the directions, all the things that he says exhort or encourage the members to practice this behavior. That's what he's saying. So it's obvious then, if you look at it, part of encouraging the young members, you know, when I first looked at this thing, I thought, what can I say to a young member to encourage him? That was my mindset. That was my thinking. I was trying to think how I was going to do this lesson because it's a little different than anything I've ever done. So I was thinking, what if I need to get a list of what I need to tell him. Not necessarily. We need to do all we can to teach them how to become devout Christians, of course. We need to do that. But there's other ways. There's a way we live, really. It's not just what I say. Because what I say is not worth a hill of beans if I don't follow through with it and do it myself. But when you're trying to teach them, if you take time with them, it doesn't just have to be in a church assembly. It could be in your home, in their home. You can teach them on a fishing trip. You can take them golfing, whatever your thing is. You can do lots of things with them. Just ride down the road in a car and talk up down that with Harry Cobb lots of times. I'll ask them, tell me about this and tell me about that. You learn a lot like that in a private setting pretty much. And you're just riding along enjoying the scenery. Beautiful place here, isn't it? Isn't the lake beautiful? We had a view of that last night. I was looking at the sunset yesterday evening. Sitting looking like that, you're in a good mood. You can sit there and talk about the Bible with anybody and you can learn. You know, Paul wrote epistles to keep in touch. That's what he did. That's about all he could do in those days. But today, we have social media to stay connected. We can send emails, text messages, Twitter. We can pick up the phone and call. Say, hey, how's your day going? Whatever. we should try to keep in contact whatever methods you use. Try to keep in contact with those young members. I think it's very important to do that. So we can monitor their progress, how they're doing, or their lack of it. We need to know where they are because they're struggling. They're going to be struggling no matter how bright they are. They're not dummies. They don't know anything about church, about the Bible. So we need to see how they're coping with their new way of living. It's a new life, isn't it? It's totally different. It's a new life. So you can both cheer them on when they're making strides, or you can encourage them when they fail. Because it's going to happen. We still fail, even though we've been in church for years. They're going to fail. Be there for them when that happens. It's important. I read somewhere that a word of encouragement during a failure is worth more than an hour of praise after success. Makes sense, doesn't it? They're pretty well up there when they know they're successful. They appreciate you patting them on the back. But when they're down and out, you give them a word of encouragement. You may have saved them. We need to check on them and tell them what we think they're doing right and wrong and all this. Help them out. Just suppose for a minute here that your boss never gave you any feedback concerning your job. You go into work, you come out, you leave, you go home back and forth every day, but you never hear a word of criticism or praise. Nothing. You know, on the surface there, you might say, well, that'd be the ideal job. The boss doesn't breathe down my neck. I'd like this. Well, but after a while, I think it would begin to bother us. You would have to wonder, you know, is he happy with my work? Am I doing okay? You know, am I doing enough? What am I doing? You got to wonder, did he like the presentation maybe that I gave? Is he happy with the results? Am I going to lose my job anytime soon because things are not going good? What's happening? I need to know. Not just at work, but in all aspects of our lives, we thrive on getting information. We need feedback to know where we stand. I'll tell you about a friend of mine concerning that. Last Friday I saw him. He's a friend of mine. He lives on the lake. He did live there on the lake in Weedowee. He's got a nice home on the lake. He's been trying to sell it for 2 years. He had a realtor. He turned it over to him. He's a good friend of his. And he had him trying to sell the house. And the guy's shown the house several times. Had a lot of people to look at. It's a nice place. Hasn't sold. Over 2 years. He's been needing to sell that to get back to Cullman, North Alabama. His wife's parents are elderly, and they need to get there and take care of him. So finally, they gave up and bought a house up there and moved up there. So last Friday when I saw him, he was down here trying to do a little work on his house. Hey, Bill, come on in. Y'all come on in. Pick out a seat. Here's a couple here. Here's one over here. So anyway, yeah, there's two and Bill will steer here if you'd like to.
Too close
to the front. Yeah. The back one's filled up first, so. But back to the story there, my friend said, I don't know what he said. I don't know what's wrong with the house. He said, all this time, he hasn't given me any feedback. He said, I'm going to talk to him and tell him to give me some negative feedback so I'll know what to correct. Maybe a squeaky board, a loose doorknob, whatever. Point is, he needs feedback. We all need feedback in whatever undertaking we're doing. So we need to remember that. Let's try to give young members some feedback. They need it in their walk. But let's just give them positive. They don't need any negative feedback. Tell them what you're doing right. They probably already figured out a lot of things they're doing wrong. They don't need us to point that out. So you don't need to do this, you know. We need to uplift them all we can. Tell them what's working. Tell them something good about themselves. You know, remember, of course, that we can't encourage them if we're talking about ourselves. I had a problem, this is what I did, you know. If we do that, we're going to come across as boastful and prideful. We can't do it like that. And sometimes we might want to say, well, give them a little perspective on their problem and say, well, this is the problem I've got. Listen to what I'm having to deal with. That doesn't help them either. That's not encouraging them to tell them how bad your life is. So either way you go about it, that's wrong. So use someone else as an illustration. That's the best thing to do. They do need an example. They need a good example. Let's don't use ourselves. Use somebody else. There's just plenty of people out there we can say, look at Brother Danny Abercrombie going to Africa and whatever. Look at Ron going to Africa. Look at Bill Jr. been preaching since he was a teenager. Look at this and that. All of them. There's so many good examples we can talk about. Remind them of what God can do. That's what we should do. Remind them of what God can do. How He can transform any situation for His glory. Romans 8:28. He can transform any person into the image of Christ. Romans 8:29. He can use anybody to accomplish His purpose. Not just anybody, but anything. He can use an atheist. He can use an animal, a bird. God can do what He wants to. Remind Him of that. Maybe we should have the young members read Romans chapter 6. You know, that sort of tells them where they are. They just got into the church. They've just been baptized. Maybe if they read Romans chapter 6, it will give them some idea of where they are. It's a good starting point, I think. Help them to develop a pattern of study. They need to learn to do this. Too many times we come in, we're just kind of lost. We don't know that we're supposed to study or whatever. We're just there. So what do I do now? You know, you don't hear many lessons on what do you do now after you come into the church. We need to help them develop a pattern of study and focus on doctrine. They need to learn doctrine. They need to be grounded first and then add to that. Don't start over in the book of Revelation. I'm still not there yet myself, so it takes a while to get there. Start with the groundwork. Teach them doctrine. It's a must. Most young members don't know all that God would have them to know when they first come into the church. They need some help. The more educated they become, the more understanding they're going to be about their life they have just acquired. This is a new life for them. So education is a big part. What a wonderful blessing it is with their newfound lifestyle. Such a blessing to them. They're still trying to get used to this idea. It's a blessing for them and for others, all their life, and others that they're going to come into contact with. You know, I've seen this a few times, and I'm sure most of you have seen this. This happens. You be at a revival, and you give an invitation at the end of a sermon. Somebody goes down the aisle to obey the gospel. They want to be baptized. And you look up, and here comes someone else down the aisle. You know what? They're trying to talk to the preacher and trying to figure out they want to be baptized. They haven't gotten to the baptistry. They haven't got their feet wet yet. They're still trying in the process. Here comes somebody else down the aisle. You know what's happened? They've already encouraged somebody else. They've already done that. Not even knowing it. They were doing what was right. Sometimes when we're doing what's right, somebody's watching us. We don't even know it. You may have encouraged lots of people just doing mundane, ordinary things that you do. You're just walking a Christian life. Others are watching you. So even before they got baptized, they'd already encouraged somebody. That's the way it works. It's something. They suddenly have a life of purpose and meaning. It's really something. When you think about it, they will. Things that they never imagined before. You know, when we're raising a child, We try to help him all we can. We teach him. We learn him to dress. Teach him to dress. When he learns to dress himself, then we'll tie his shoes on and on and on. Eventually, Danny's granddaughter said she just got her learner's license. She's learning to drive a car. You know, we teach them to do what they can. We teach them to stand on their own 2 feet. We prepare them. That's what we do. Well, we won't always be there for them, will we? She's going to have to drive by herself. Grandpa won't last forever. He won't be around to help her, you know. So she's going to be driving. She got to learn on her own. I'll pick on you, Danny. It's the same with the Christian walk. We can and should stand ready to help one another, especially the young members. Always be there for one another. That's what we're supposed to do. but especially the young members. The Bible says to bear one another's burdens, encourage them, strengthen them. But ultimately, I want to change gears here a little bit. Ultimately, it's He that makes the decision to obey God. Nobody can do that for Him. He makes that decision to continue or to give up. They decide that on their own. We do all we can to encourage. We do anything we can. They make that decision. Maybe times when they're alone and things are just crashing in around them. This world's full of problems. The devil sees to that. So here they are alone and things are just crashing in around them. When you get to that point where it's only you, and you're all alone, sometimes it can be a scary situation. Especially if you're not experienced. It's a critical time. Most suicides are committed when people are alone. That's most of them. They need to know of a surety that God is with them. They need to understand that. They are not alone. God is with them. They need to learn from David's examples to trust in God in situations like this. David had some good times, but he had some bad times. And he trusted in God. That's how he got through. He didn't have a whole lot of people around there encouraging him and helping him. He would kind of talk to himself at times. You ever talk to yourself? I won't ask for a show of hands. Some people think if you talk to yourself, it's a sign that you're going crazy. And then some say if you don't answer yourself, then you're okay. You know, if it's a one-sided conversation, it's not too bad. Well, it's really thinking out loud. And sometimes they say it can be helpful. Research has been done. They say that the act of using personal verbal clues can actually help you to be successful. I know you young ones don't know anything about this, but I'll be doing something, several things on my mind. I'll get up to go get something, and I'll get halfway there, and I think, what's it that was coming after? You get like that. You may think it's funny. I used to laugh at Grandma. Come on in, buddy. But if you just kind of say, if you look for a hammer and say, where's the hammer? If you repeat that a time or two verbally, then you won't get lost and wonder what you're looking for. You may look crazy to whoever's in the room, but say that helps. I think most people do talk to themselves at times to some degree, especially when they're discouraged and alone. And that can be a bad time to do it. When we're discouraged from some blunder we made, some we messed up. We're mad with ourselves. We want to kick ourselves. We often begin telling ourselves, this is the worst thing that could have happened to me. This is the end. I'm such a failure. God's going to give up on me. I just can't do this. Nothing ever works out. On and on and on. You just say all these things. You're hard on yourself. When we do this, you're already low. You're down pretty low. You're so mad with yourself and disappointed in yourself. You're already low. But when you start talking like this, you perpetuate the disappointment. You start spiraling down even further. You really get down low when you're doing this. Don't do that. Don't do that. You messed up, so what? You messed up before. We do that. It's human nature. Don't put yourself down so much. That's not helping anything. It's making things worse. Don't beat yourself up. What you say to yourself matters most in these situations. That's why the young members need to be taught to read some of the Psalms and things that David wrote. Don't you notice 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 6. This is a very good verse. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him. I'd be distressed too if all of you had rocks about to kill me and stone me to death. Because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. Did you get that? Everybody there was, no one there was encouraging him. It was right the opposite. Everybody there was about to stone him to death. He was distressed all by himself. He encouraged himself in the Lord. It's amazing. David's one of my favorite people anyway. I like David. I like the things he does. He messed up too, but he really knew how to walk close with God. And who would think about encouraging yourself Sometimes we need to do that. If you're all by yourself, nobody else is there. Young members should remind themselves of all the things that God has done for him. When you read the Bible, you quickly see that God has a history of being faithful to his people. His people have a history of wandering off, doing wrong, and just leaving him, giving up. God has a history of bringing them back, giving them a fresh start, cleaning them up, and getting them back on the road. That's what God does. David talked to himself a good bit throughout the Psalms. He reminds himself of what God has done in the past for the people of Israel, for one thing. He remembers God's compassion, his forgiveness, and his mercy. He meditates on that. He thinks about that. He loves God. He said in Psalms 143 and 5, I'm sorry, the light's not good here. It's not my eyes, it's the light. 143 and 5, he says, I remember the days of old. I meditate on all thy works. I muse on the work of thy hands. David reminds himself of what God has done for him personally. Psalms 30, verses 1 and 2. I will extol thee, O Lord, for thou hast lifted me up and hast made my foes to rejoice over me. O Lord, my God, I cried unto thee, and thou hast healed me. One more I'd like to read there of David. Psalms 34 and 4. David said, I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. That's what he did. I sought the Lord, and he heard me. He delivered me from all my fears. He can tell you a lot about what God does. You can read all the Psalms, and there are all these few I just picked out two or three. They're endless. There's so many of them. Again and again, David talks about what God has done for him. He appreciated what God had done for him, and he served God. There are times when I think all of us need to remind ourselves what God has done for us. We do. We need to be. You know, sometimes we're pessimistic, and we think about so-and-so got it better than I have, and just here I have, I've got this cold, I can't get over this cold, I broke my foot, on and on and on. So we can find so many bad things if we look for them. There's a lot more good things if you look. There's so much better. If you look what all God has offered, what all God has done, what all God is going to give us compared to anything we've suffered, this side over here pales. It's nothing. We should never complain. He came through for us when we needed financial help. We needed a job. God provided one. The doctor gave us a report that wasn't good. God saw us through it every step of the way. We're still here, aren't we? When we encourage ourselves this way, we remember that we're not alone. That's what we should do. No matter how it feels at this moment, we're not stumbling through this world alone. There may be problems, obstacles. We're going to face those, but we're not alone. Focus on that anytime, anything you're doing. We're not alone. Think about that. To forget what he's done for us or ignore what he has done would be to betray the marvelous grace that he's given us. That's what it would be. Be ashamed, wouldn't it? We can't give up because God is with us. He doesn't give up on us. We cannot give up on him. That's how we intentionally encourage ourselves. We need to communicate that to the young members. That's what they need to know. In conclusion, in summary, we should make every effort to encourage the young members, of course, by following the guidelines of Apostle Paul, the guidelines of David, both those men, and then just reading the Bible in general. And they should lean on us, on all of us. We should be there for them. Be the best example possible. We need to do that anyway for our own selves, but be sure we can be the best example possible. Try to think about what we're doing when we're with them. Maybe be a little hypocritical. Be better than usual. You want to encourage them all you can. I'm not saying be a hypocrite. I'm just tongue-in-cheek, but I'm saying have it on your mind first and foremost. Don't just get to talking about something else. Talk more about the Bible. Stay focused on what you're doing. When you're teaching those, they got a little sponge of a mind. They're listening to what you say. They're young members. They need to hear about the Bible. So don't just stray off on something else. Stay more focused than you ordinarily would. Give them regular positive feedback so they'll know that somebody cares. If they figure out that nobody in church cares whether they are or not, guess what? They won't be there. Let them know that they're important. You're glad to have them there. Encourage them any way you can. study the Bible with them. Be careful to teach sound doctrine. Be very careful to do that. Give them that over and over till maybe it's coming out their ears, they're tired of hearing it. Tell them over and over and over so they can tell others. It might be that when it came down to be baptized when they were, they might get together and study together the sound doctrine. Maybe they can do that. Make sure they know how valuable they are in God's kingdom. You know how valuable we are? God says, you know, if you lost your soul, if you got to gain the whole world and lost your soul, what have you gained? What he's saying there is, your soul, your one soul, you are worth more than the entire world. That's what he's saying. Communicate that to them. Let them know how valuable they are. And finally, make sure that you stress the great love that God has for them as much as you can. We don't understand God's great love. We know he loves us more than we can comprehend, more than we love. Tell them that. Tell them how much he loves them as much as you possibly can. They need to know that. You can serve God better when you understand how much he loves you over and beyond anything you can love back. That's my lesson. I hope maybe that you might be encouraged to encourage the young members. We all have a responsibility to do that, and I hope maybe this may have been helpful. Thank you.